It is indeed the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Guillermo Mash on behalf of the Without a Roof radio program. And you are indeed listening to 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Also, be aware that opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
Give me 2 eggs. So, tomorrow I got nothing.
We believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own beds and different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence.
Evening, voters. Some people in this country are very, very rich, but most of you are very, very poor. Skin! You know why? Because you're all lazy.
Good boy would get a sweet thing on the side, home cooking on the side. Side order could be a daughter, and you're looking good. Come on, baby, eat the rich, put the bite on the son of a bitch. Don't mess up, don't you give me no switch. Come on, baby. What you want? Is that the meat you wanted to eat? How would you ever know? Hash browns and bacon strips, I love the way that you lick your lips. No fooling, I can see it drooling. Feel the hunger grow. Come on, baby, eat the rich. Put the bite on the son of a bitch. Give me no switch. Come on, baby. Chinese, eat salmon.
of grease. You're on the shelf, you eat yourself. Come on and bite my bone. Come on, baby, eat the rich. Bite down on the son of a bitch. Don't mess around, don't you give me no switch. Come on, baby, and eat the rich. Come on, baby, and eat the rich. Sitting here in a high tuxedo. You wanna see my bacon torpedo?
Ever pondered, gosh, I wonder what Guillermo's favorite Motorhead song is? I say boom, Eat the Rich, from the video of the same name. Welcome to the final Without a Roof, the pandemic coverage series here on KZFR 90.1 FM, your community people-powered radio station. Our show this hour is story-driven, with a Guillermo Mash penned Chico News and Review guest comment, ending with a letter to the editor. Sandwiched between the bread are two roses for truth. Chico News and Review arts divo Jason Cassidy and Paul F.N. Bowden, the author of House Keys Not Handcuffs. The sauce is music for the struggles of our times, including a song dedicated to my dear friend Diane Suzuki. Bread and Roses from the YouTube channel Woman of the World Music. And here we go. The system isn't broken. It's working exactly as intended, marginalizing large swaths of humans based on gender, skin color, sexual preference, country of origin, and economic status. We just need to tweak the system, my ass. George Orwell penned, "Journalism is printing what someone else does not want published. Everything else is public relations. To so be it, demand and live the truth as a way of life." True this. Stop parroting the mantra, connecting people to services. The system has compartmentalized an intentionally crippled triage model as a way to hoodwink the public into believing the destitute just need to connect to these fragmented and woefully underfunded systems, and redemption is theirs. It's bullcrap for the masses, propped up by the small number of people that climb a rung or two on the infamous ladder, from surviving under a bridge to living in a dingy apartment in the gentrified side of town. Take charge of your story, be it personal, group, or organization-centric. Storytelling is how we build a coalition based on trust and understanding. Poetry, verse, song, visuals, audio, photography, art pieces, et al. Engulf yourself with the characters and setting you need for a happy ending and tell it like it is. Just be sure it's engrossing and gathers passionate people spreading love where there is darkness and peace where there is struggle. Kindness is the highest form of intelligence. So be smart. All right, Paul Bowden. Maybe a 1 minute to land on something, man, before we let you go. What would that be, Paul Bowden, if you had a minute? What'd you do?
there's artwork, there's T-shirts, there's dance routines, there's street theater. We need to build a social justice party. And not a political party. I mean a party. We need to make this exciting. We need to make this fun. We need to have everybody, no matter what your skill set is, no matter what your background is, no matter what your primary language is, no matter what your housing status is, if you believe in social justice for all people, if you believe in human rights and human beings are a priority and treating people decently because they're human beings, then I would ask you to contact us, to get up onto our website, sign up for our newsletter, let us know you're out there, and we'll hook you up.
Without a Roof Radio program is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Mount Shasta Spring Water Company, serving the community for over two decades with natural spring water bottled at the base of Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta Spring Water is available for home and office delivery at 1-800-922-6227. Also made possible by the Ark Store in Chico, putting a green philosophy towards a worthy cause. The Ark Store offers gently used clothing, furniture, antiques, and collectibles. Shopping at an Ark Store and donating gently used items helps Ark provide support for local families with developmental disabilities. The Ark Store is located at 2020 Park Avenue in Chico. More info at thearkstore.org. Guillermo Mash for the June 24th edition of the Without a Roof Radio program on KZFR, and I'm always pleased, even though it's not in person, it's always good to see Jason's face, but we only got your voice today, Jason. We got your radio voice.
You can just imagine my face.
I can imagine Arts Devo's face. Putting together a special edition that's going to be coming out July 1st. Why don't you give us the lowdown, Jason Cassidy from Arts Devo, Chico News and Review?
Well, the Chico News and Review, as most people know, we ceased publication in middle of March due to the coronavirus pandemic. We lost pretty much, you know, the bulk of our advertisers, which meant that we lost all the money that makes the paper go. So we have three newspapers, Reno, Chico, and Sacramento, and all three had to cease publication and lay off all the employees. Since then, you know, we've worked really hard behind the scenes. We have a print issue coming out on July 1st, but leading up to then, we've been online only, and thanks to some Paycheck Protection Program loans from the government, the newspaper has been able to have sort of a skeleton staff of people together in order to make this happen.
I was telling Melissa Doherty, the editor, I thought the big silver lining to me is you guys really needed to beef up your online presence. And, you know, given the staff restrictions and the limited amount of money putting out a wonderful weekly every week, maybe this has allowed you to put something together you might not have had time to do?
Absolutely, for sure. And I agree. You know, I came to the News Review in 2003, and that website we had was the same one we've had since then. So, you know, I say that with a caveat, though. I mean, the standard reply to anything to do with media and the newspaper industry, especially, is that, you know, everything's heading online. You got to get the online going. And it's true. You know, that's a great way to connect and as well as to sort of network. But if you look at the numbers of the traffic that we get online versus the numbers of people who read the newspaper, physical newspaper, it always is shocking to people to know that our readership is 10 times greater in print than it is online.
Oh, yeah.
So for that 10%, they love it. And it's a much improved product. And you know, whether you're looking at it on a mobile phone or a smartphone or on a computer, it's a better experience. The graphics are better. It's an easier way to get the information and send it around to people. But then there's 90% something like that. It's a high percentage, over 50% for sure, of our readers haven't read a single word that we've put out since we went out. And so that's not good. You know, that's not serving the community in the way that we want. And it's not being a part of the community as much as we want.
Yeah, I think it cuts both ways because in a way, your online presence, the bigger the online presence, the more people know about your print, and the more that the print news is out there promoting your online, more people know about the online because a lot of people don't know you're online.
Exactly, and that's what we're hoping part of this print edition is to sort of, you know, make that announcement. We were cut off guard by this, you know. We had to sort of like... You know, it was like fall off a cliff, go into deep depression, and then take the covers off from over your head and come out and see what we can do. And, you know, that's speaking for myself. And that's what we did, you know, and I'm still an advocate of print. And I hope that, you know, we don't know exactly where the News Review is going to go. If we'll continue in that pattern of being a monthly or return to weekly or twice a month or something like that. But I mean, if it weren't just online only, to me, that would be a bummer.
That'd be a big bummer. I agree. Yeah, we need the print.
Because I'm not a Luddite or anything, but I hate online. And I don't like having to navigate that way. I mean, there's a lot of things to be bummed about, you know, right now. And that's being online and me being cranky about it is totally at the bottom of the list. You know, I'm much more upset that, you know, well, businesses are shut down. And as an arts editor, that there's no art scene for the artists and the arts patrons and the arts editors to talk about. And a lot of things to consider.
Not only that, the contribution to the community, and it, let's just face it, Jason. When you know, someone does a story on you or your organization or your business, and it ends up in print, that's a bigger compliment for you than being online. No, not dishing online, but it's a lot easier to get online nowadays than it is to be printed in a weekly. Yeah.
You and I could set up a WordPress website this afternoon and be going.
Listeners just joining, we are speaking with Jason Cassidy, Arts Diva for the Chico News and Review, who's given us some great news that the Chico News and Review is going to be printing a monthly the first week of July, and then they're going to play it by ear from there. I just welcome you to the Without a Roof program here on the 24th, Jason. A couple more questions before I let you go.
Sure.
For me, it's hard for me to fathom. I'll start with that. But many people dish the CNR for being a for-profit company that gives away a weekly arts and news magazine. What do you say to those people, Jason?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's good and bad to all business models. And, you know, having, you know, for-profit, ad revenue driven company has been good for us. We've always, you know, kept a strong wall between advertising and editorial.
Right.
You know, we don't know what goes in the paper advertising wise until the paper comes out. So, you know, we never write to the advertisers or kowtow to that. We write what we want. And that's bitten us in the butt, you know, a few times. The famous dildo issue. Ask around.
I will.
that bit us. That lost us a lot of clients. You know, and you know, the other way that a lot of media companies are going and alternative news media is going online and going nonprofit. It's a big trend, and that's something we're looking at as well for a more sustainable model potentially for the future. Is going nonprofit, but hopefully not making it just online. There's very few examples of people who've done print too, because doing print, printing something, having to distribute it, those are big expenses. And online only, offers a much more streamlined and a cheaper way to go about things. But then, as I mentioned earlier, you know, you lose a lot of your readers, and there's a trade-off.
Not only that, for the writers. I mean, if I'm a writer, God, it's just such a joy to be, you know, printed every week and distributed.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's like magic almost. It's like, you know, you print this thing and then it's out there forever.
So the other thing that I think is a silver lining, I know Melissa Doherty some years ago, maybe 4 years ago, started a nonprofit to try to raise money so we could hire journalists to do long form pieces. So before I pop the question to you, but it would seem that not only your online presence is stronger now, but maybe your nonprofit fundraising as well?
We're stronger in the sense that we're doing it. We did that as like a singular thing, and we still have that money. We earned a certain amount of money. I can't remember the exact total. And that's sitting there waiting for us to put into effect, you know, hiring a writer or putting it towards writing of some sort. And then that model would be something that we would imitate if we went nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And yeah, how that's going to look, that's what we're working on now. And so we're going to still push reader donations, kind of get us through this middle period. And then if we go back to for-profit after this and, you know, rework things, you know, we'll do that. And if we go to nonprofit, then we'll have a whole new campaign that we'll be presenting, similar to what you all do with public radio, where you try to get membership and you have a certain monetary goal for the year. And, you know, we'll, of course, share all that with people if that's the direction we end up going, which we'll, you know, probably decide the next couple of months. And, you know, as we put these print issues out, we'll let everyone know what's going on.
To me, this might be my most important question, because I've been a staunch advocate for print journalism since I've been in Chico. I mean, it's just a wonderful thing that not only do we have a daily, the Enterprise Record, we have a weekly in the CNR and an award-winning, well, you're all award-winning, but the Orion journalist newspaper for Chico State. You know, and I've often told people, Jason, you got a problem with a story, talk to the writer, talk to the person that wrote it, you know, but,
you know,
making that marker, you know, what would you say to community members that pan the CNR for not having enough in-depth investigative reporting?
The CNR? I'd say you're not reading the CNR.
You know, it's we're both laughing because I've read some just anyway. Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I mean, you know, not every article is in depth or is, you know, investigative, you know, resources that takes a lot of resources. And that's kind of why we, you know, raise money for that kind of thing. But I would do the Pepsi challenge between us and any other newspaper for the amount of in-depth coverage versus not in-depth that we have, the ratio. I mean, just in the wake of the campfire, we did over 300 stories. We did entire issues devoted to the stories of the people, the circumstances, the aftermath, and the impacts that it made on them. I mean, Melissa Doherty just did a 3,000 word plus story online only, where she watched in depth every single witness statement made at the recent hearing with the PG&E executives. And that's not a super in-depth investigative thing, but that's a chore to bear witness to every single story and then to share it in a way that sort of like helps that community of people heal.
It's interesting because that kind of broaches what some of the responses I've had to folks, because we're in an interesting age and we've been in it for maybe 10 years where, well, I'd really like to read an investigative article. It's 4,500 words. Well, it's kind of hard to do that in a print magazine. You know, and then knowing some of the journalists as well, some of the stories, you know, just talking to, you know, folks like Asia and Ken and the age old adage, Jason, I'm sure it applies to you, man, I wish I had more words in print. I mean, I had stuff I couldn't put in the article. So.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, our cover features are generally 3,000 words, and that's not like crazy long, but that gets the point across, and we follow things up with news features both before and after, and the story, you know, continues.
The story continues. We do hope it continues for in perpetuity. I can remember meeting folks from the CNR like 3 years ago when you did your 40th Jeff Von Kennel. And did I get that right? Is it Jeff Von Kennel?
Yeah.
And he's going to continue being the owner, and he's the force behind what's going to happen with the paper going forward.
He's one of the owners. There's three owners. And, okay. Going forward, I mean, this is nothing set in stone, but if we continue in a for-profit model, the three newspapers will very likely stay. Reno, Chico, and Sacramento will stay connected. And as we move forward, if we go nonprofit, you know, one of the options that is a probability would be that we separate, and then Chico is Chico, Sacramento, Reno is Reno, and then they just go off on their own. It's an easier way to do that. I mean, no matter what, even if Jeff's, you know, the CEO still, or if he's just an advisor, he'll always be connected to it, and it's his baby. I've said it before that people sometimes rail on publishers and owners and stuff, but Jeff Von Kennel and his wife Deborah Redman as our leaders are, I mean, if you think of the Newsroom Review as being like an icon or like a foundational part of the town, Jeff and Deborah are a foundational part of alternative news media in general, like the history of alternative news media. They've been doing it for 40 years, and not just in Chico, but in Santa Barbara. They're some of the people that started it. The Sacramento News Review and Reno News Review would not exist without them. They started those. And the Chico News Review would have long ago failed financially and burned in a terrible, awful way in the 80s if Jeff and Deborah hadn't come on board.
Well, thanks for sharing some clarity on that, Jason.
Sure.
Anything that we've missed that you'd like to talk about for our listeners or circle back on real quick?
I just say, you know, go to our website, chico.newsreview.com, and see the stories that we're still writing. I mean, we're still there. It's not as many stories, but with a skeleton staff of people, I mean, I'm the only full-time Chico News Review person right now. With a skeleton staff of people, we're still scooping other newspapers and news media with stories. And you know, for me personally, I have to thank the readers who've contributed. I mean, you're literally paying for my mortgage and helping me keep my job. I'm going to work as hard as I can for the next few months to keep putting out the stories of our community and to help, you know, create a path forward for the paper.
I just love your latest column, Jason, the STFU column. Why don't you tell us, the listeners, just a little bit about that and then end with how we can get this paper on the first.
Well, I wrote a column on protest music. It's a new Public Enemy song that has words that we can't know in it.
STFU.
But it's STFU, yeah. The song is called State of the Union, and it's, it addresses our president and the state things in our country. And what I like about it is that it was pure frustration. The song is kind of like, I don't know, the main hook is a little disjointed and almost doesn't flow, but it's like, I think it's just because it's such an emotional reaction to things. It's just raw. And if you take just a cursory dive into the internet, you can see that there's dozens and dozens of songs out there of people who are just like reacting to the moment and, you know, police violence in our country and, you know, frustrations with that and many other things. So yeah, McCollum, I linked to a few of those videos this week.
Listeners just joining, we're ending our conversation with Jason Cassidy, Arts Devo, with the exciting news of a print that you're going to have, be able to grab a CNR and put it in your hands on July 1st. So tell our listeners one more time how they can get that issue.
Just go to your regular pickup spot and pick it up. It's going to be most everywhere. You know, some places may not be open, but we'll, of course, always have them in the machine out in front of the News and Review there on the roundabout downtown. And you know, all the grocery stores, coffee shops, other public places where you normally could find it. Some places have pulled their machines for COVID concerns. And if you normally went to a place where they had it out front, just go inside and check. We'll probably have them in a pile inside.
All right, Jason Cassidy, thanks for joining us today.
All right, thanks, Bill. Appreciate it, man.
Know what it's like to have.
All right, Guillermo Mash here for the June 24th edition of the Without a Roof Radio program. And, you know, in past weeks, we have covered the issue of Black Lives Matter in the world of post-George Floyd. And I'm really pleased to be doing a forward promo for a Black Lives Matter art show. And I have the organizer right on the phone right now for a pre-record, Natalie Katsikas. Welcome to KZFR, Natalie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's a joy. Why don't you just fill our listeners in on what you got going on?
The first weekend that the Black Lives Matter art show will be showing is Saturday, July 18th and July 19th, the Sunday, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And for more information about the show, to get a ticket to the show, just email me at natkatsikas, K-A-T-S-I-K-A-S, at gmail.com. For more information about the show and the location of the show. We are still calling out to artists, so there's still time to create. All mediums are accepted at this show. Everyone and anyone is welcome to submit work. We're pretty much just asking artists to create work that supports the ideals that are held by the Black Lives Matter movement. It can include or be, but not limited to, racial injustice in America, police brutality, systemic racism, really anything in that range.
What kind of submissions have you gotten so far, Natalie, here on the 23rd of June?
So we have a lot of great paintings so far. Some of them have actually been around the nation. So we have one artist in Miami, and I reached out to another artist in Buffalo, New York. She writes poems, and she made a video of her saying her poem. So we're going to be able to share her reading her poem at the show. So it'll be like on repeat on a TV or a computer screen for viewers to listen to. So we have that. And then we have a few different paintings of how people are reacting to this time, the state of the world right now, how Black Lives Matter movement has influenced them as a person and has influenced their art.
You will be showing this at different locations, to the two consecutive Saturdays and Sundays, same time, 6 to 9 p.m.?
Yes.
All right, that was Natalie Katsikas, and she's organizing a three consecutive weekend of Black Lives Matter art show, all different types of art, paintings and music and spoken word. And the first weekend that she'll be doing this is July 18th and 19th, and then the subsequent two weekends, July 25th and 26th, and August 1st and 2nd, all of those dates are Saturday, Sundays, and all of the times are 6 to 9 p.m. To learn more about the art show and to submit as well, submit your work to be considered, send an email to Natalie Katsikas at natkatsikas at gmail.com. The Without a Roof Radio Program. It's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by OM Foods. With Whole Foods, organic, non-GMO, and a dairy-free menu. Open 12 noon to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Their full menu is at iloveomfoods.com. For pickup orders and limited inside dining, social distancing required. Pickup orders will be on the tables with your name on it. Please wait outside till your order is ready. OM Foods thanks you for keeping the community safe. Details at iloveomfoods.com or give them a call, 965-5263. Also made possible by Chico News and Review. Due to the impact of the coronavirus, publication of the CNR will be suspended until the crisis is over. Chico News and Review is an independent news outlet with donations accepted at newsreview.com/Sacramento/donate. And get on out there, Google them, and check out their blog. They're doing some wonderful work online only during this crisis. All right, Guillermo Mash here, Without a Roof Radio Program, June 24th. And what better way to end the Without a Roof pandemic radio program run? We've aired shows the entire month of April, May, and now June with a dear friend and colleague, Paul Bowden, out of San Francisco. And this is an interview actually we did over the phone end of April. And then, well, a lot of things have happened since the end of April. And I kind of put this one on the back burner, but But now's the spot, because we're organizing some things here in Chico and the surrounds around ending the sweeps and looking at legal ways that we can affect some change for folks that are experiencing houselessness with the assistance of Western Regional Advocacy Project. But Paul Bowden from the Huffington Post biography, Paul Bowden is the organizing director of Western Regional Advocacy Project. Paul became homeless at the age of 16 after the death of his mother, and he began volunteering at a drop-in shelter in San Francisco in 1983, eventually becoming a program director there. Paul then worked as a case manager in a supportive hotel program for mentally ill people. Paul served as executive director of San Francisco's Coalition on Homelessness for 16 years and was a founder of the Community Housing Partnership, a nationally recognized permanent housing corporation with optional supportive services. He has served as president of its board for 10 years. Paul was also a board member of the National Coalition for the Homeless and co-chair of its Civil Rights and Grassroots Organizing Work Group. Paul has received dozens of community awards during the last 25 years and recognition from the city and county of San Francisco, the state of California, and the Congress of the United States. Paul regularly writes articles and op-eds and travels throughout the country giving talks and trainings, including this radio interview here on People Power Radio. Welcome to KZFR.
Yeah, hey, welcome. Good to be on with you again.
It is, Paul. It's been a few years, but you're going to help our listeners get caught up on the wonderful work you're doing and maybe give them an understanding as well of how many groups you're working with and some insights on how our neighbors without a roof are faring during the pandemic.
Well, I mean, I would want to start off letting people know that there is just some amazing people out there. The mutual aid stuff and the community building stuff that is happening, and you know, it really shows that, you know, when the stuff hits the fan, you know, the best in some people just really comes out. The people that have a good heart, it just explodes and shines and spreads light everywhere at times like this. And there is just an amazing amount of that energy out there. Unfortunately, that is not the energy that drives our political system or our capitalist system, but it's there, and it's beautiful to be even a small part of. We're currently in 11 cities in the three states and just helping to support and provide resources and materials for people that, you know, in Santa Rosa, in Sacramento, in L.A., in Denver, in Portland, Austin, Texas, New York City. These groups are doing mutual support of each other and doing direct mutual aid work in their cities and communities.
I had a little tagline, Paul, that said, "The most trying times bring out folks who try the most." Right there.
Yeah, that's right? That's kind of what I was trying to say, just a lot more articulate maybe than I said it. And it's not surprising. I mean, you've been through the fires. We've been through the earthquakes. This is, you know, the magic you would want to capture in the bottle for how community members can treat each other. And it's really beautiful.
It is. You know, and I feel really blessed here, you know, to have been out on the streets pretty much since the pandemic and to be involved with telling the story, Paul, that was part of the dialogue that got the city to codify and tell the police, not only just verbally, but codify it through a city council emergency session, that folks that have no place to be are not to be swept along and told to go elsewhere.
Well, remember the Right to Rest Act?
Oh, gosh, do I
ever.
Yep.
Like, remember when we tried to do that at the state level? Four times we ran that bill. Mm-hmm. And it'll be back again at some point. But, you know, had we been able to get that passed when we introduced it in 2012, the first time, you know, we wouldn't be in this reactionary mode that we're in right now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, homeless people didn't create homelessness. The federal government did. We shouldn't be the ones going to jail because it exists.
Amen that, Paul Bowden.
And, you know, imagine had we, back in the early 80s, being old like me, I was actually there. I was coming up off the streets in 83 when FEMA was the funding source for homeless programs because it was considered a crisis.
Yeah.
But imagine if the federal response had been, oh, wow, wait a second. We cut all this housing funding and all these people are ending up with no housing. Maybe we should restore it. We wouldn't have to worry about what are homeless people going to do during shelter in place because they would have had a place. You know, had we just addressed the cause and effect of cutting the housing funding, stopped it, restored that funding, and let people get back in their homes, we wouldn't be talking about, well, how are we going to respond to homelessness during the COVID crisis? Because as we didn't in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, we wouldn't have all these people living in our streets. We wouldn't be worried about this crap. It's systemic. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to trace the without housing stuff on our website.
And Western Regional Advocacy Project can be found at WRAP, WRAP, home, HOME, .org.
We'll show you. And this was documented in the 14 years since we released it. This guy, Earl Blumenauer, a Congress member in Oregon, was holding it in his hand the other week when he introduced a housing bill. It's as relevant today as it was then because it's about how did we get here, not what's happening tomorrow. And it's a call for cause and effect. You want to fix something, look at what caused it. If your pipes are leaking and all you're doing is patching the stain on the wall, your pipe's going to keep leaking. You got to open it up and fix the leak. Well, the leak here is the complete decimation of affordable housing funding. The effect is homelessness. Fix the leak, you'll fix the effect of it.
You know, I was at a meeting. It was a COC meeting. They had some consultants come in. Paul, I'm sure you've been in some of these meetings. And they had this fancy graph up there. And I happened to be sitting next to a friend or some Board of Supers here up in Butte County, Tammy Ritter. And the biggest thing was towards the right. It said, naturally occurring affordable housing. And I showed that to her, and she didn't skip a beat. She said they must be talking about bird nests.
Yeah.
Naturally occurring affordable housing, Paul. Yeah, not much of that going on, unfortunately.
There never has been. There's no such thing. Only a consultant could come up with a term that asinine.
Listeners just joining, you're listening to the Without a Roof radio program on KZFR 90.1 FM as Guillermo Mash interviews Paul Bowden, Executive Director of Western Regional Advocacy Project. And Paul is a nationally recognized expert, consultant, and just an all-around advocate activist for those without roofs. Shifting gears a little bit, Paul, I mean, what can you tell us about some of the legal research you're doing around, you know, getting people sheltered during the pandemic and post-pandemic?
The campaign that the RAP members helped launched is now working with groups in 11 cities around sweeps of homeless people's belongings and towing of their vehicles and their encampments. This was pre-COVID outbreak. This had started. This actually goes back to the Right to Rest Act. And once the local emergency declarations were made by the governments, the local governments and the state, you know, there's powers that are vested with the politicians that declare these emergencies that enable them to do things that in normal times they wouldn't be able to do, commandeer stuff for the health and safety of the whole community. Tell people it's illegal to go outside, you know? Like, they're vested with powers that are only given to them during a time of crisis so they can make quick decisions to protect the whole community. Sometimes, in this case, when it comes to commandeering hotel rooms, and you can imagine in San Francisco, L.A., Portland, you know, these major tourist meccas, but in every community, you have a bunch of tourist hotel units. They have the ability to put people that can't shelter in place because there's no place for them to go to shelter that's safe. Shelters are not safe during a shelter-in-place pandemic or decree. They could just put people in there and figure out the money stuff later. They have the legal authority to do it. And none of them in the 11 cities that I'm talking about, none of them were choosing to exercise that authority. So this awesome group of law students, it's like a network of law students from around the country. We got in touch with them, and they volunteered, and 12 students signed up, and within 1 week had done a deep dive looking in Texas, in New York, in California, in Oregon, and in Colorado, because that's the cities, that's where the cities are, and granting the politicians the authority, both the governors and the local politicians, the authority to do this. Was there anything we could tie into that would require them to use that authority? And we're still in that phase of the research project. And in terms of they've done a quick hit assessment, this is what it looks like, maybe this, maybe constitutional, maybe health legislation or health guidelines. You know, putting people in shelter when they're not supposed to be in groups is an oxymoron. Even when they say the shelter beds are 3 feet apart, CDC, Center for Disease Control, says that there should be 6 feet of separation. The governor of California told the shelter programs, well, it's okay if the beds are only 3 feet apart instead of 6 feet. But regardless, 6 feet, 3 feet, once you're at a bed, you're in a congregant space. So it's still not a healthy situation to be in for the staff or the client. And we're looking to see if there is the possibility to say to the mayor or say to the governors, look, either you do this or we're taking you to court and you're going to get your butt kicked as causing negligence and harm to the health and safety of the whole community. If homeless people en masse started getting COVID, so would the broader community. And these kids were amazing. And it's all volunteer. It's all remote. They're in Georgetown, they're in Miami, they're in Harvard, you know, they're in New York City, they're all over the country, and they just care. And so we're in the process of seeing if we can provide local groups like the Community Action Network there, or Santa Rosa's Homeless Action, or the San Francisco Homeless Coalition, to see if we can provide them memos that they can bring to local law firms or local, so, you know, legal aid firms to say, hey, we don't have to keep asking nicely for the mayor to exercise their power. We can force them to. I mean, the days of poor people asking the government nicely to treat them like human beings, we need to get over it. It's been 37 years since the advent of contemporary homelessness. Please, this ain't working.
Listeners, just joining me, I'm talking to Paul Bowden, Executive Director, Western Regional Advocacy Project. And he was just talking about a wonderful research project that was being done in cities that RAP coordinates with. Chico is one of them. But I'm really impressed with this memo, Paul. I need to start circulating this to people that can action, you know, some of the stuff contained in here. I'm looking at one of the headers here, but the city manager has a mandatory duty to preserve the health and safety of the residents, and the utilization of city resources and private parties can force action with private right of action. There really is a lot of teeth in this research that they gave us. Any insights or any more to talk about these memos that are going out to the different communities? Or
this is, for the most part, they're second and third year law students. Uh-huh. And one of the skills that you get in law school is how to do research. Duh, right? I know, but there's a lot of similarities, and then there's a lot of unique twists in local legislative efforts. And that's why we needed to actually look into each one separately. And now those memos are being reviewed by practicing attorneys to see whether the private right of action or the constitutional claims, or like to see what the strongest, quickest legal approach. And in some communities, it doesn't look as helpful in others. I remember from the Chico one that the student that wrote that memo felt like there was a private right of action. But before you bring that to court, you need to double and triple check it, right. You know, because you don't go to that well twice. And so it's not a long, laborious process, but the memos have been done, the information has been culled out of the local systems, and now a team of practicing attorneys are reviewing it to come up with options that we can give local communities and say, this is the research that was done, this is the assessment that was conducted of that research to make sure it's accurate and to do a case review of lawsuits that might have been in a similar context, although with a pandemic, you're not going to find a lot of similar context to pull from. Times like this, boy, you got to get creative because this is life and death.
Over the years, people ask me, what do you do if I hit the lottery? I'm at the point of this process 8 years in, Paul. I'm like, if I won $100 million, I'd put $100 million into legal defense funds and start suing people to get our rights.
I would put half of it into a political a pack. Get the laws changed, right. And then I would sue the hell out of them.
There you go.
But yeah, I get your point.
All right, Paul, it's always such a joy. Is there anything I missed that you might want to bring up for our listeners?
And on our blog post on our website, you'll see a lot of roundups from the mutual aid stuff that is happening, and you'll see some stuff like that. We just published an article that's been getting picked up in a whole bunch of places just around how our 37-year history of how we have chosen as a country to address the issue of homelessness in spite of accessing housing, without being able to access housing, just how failed that. I mean, imagine if people had a place to live, we wouldn't be having this interview. So, like, we need to get back to pre-1983, when housing was actually available to people that were poor. And if we do that, we're addressing homelessness. But nothing ends homelessness like a home. And that's not just a tagline. That's reality. And people need to stay focused on that.
Guillermo Mash here to thank every listener, underwriter, and supporter for continuing to make community radio in the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond a reality. You can show some love and care right now by heading over to the KZFR website at kzfr.org and leaving some public affairs programming gratitude in the tip jar for this show and The Real Issue with Sue Hillebrand coming up next at the top of the hour. For listeners wondering what I plan to do during my radio sabbatical, the entire months of July, August, and September, I'm going to be doing the things I love with people I love and finding new things and people to add to my list of loves. Today is my last Wednesday as a person in my 50s as I celebrate 60 years of circling the sun on June 29th. I was born in Lawrence, Mass., the city of the Bread and Roses strike of 1912, the same year my granddad was born. I'm no stranger to racism and bigotry, which was the vernacular everywhere, growing up in northern Massachusetts. From ethnic jokes to the N-word, which I last said jokingly in public 30 years ago. An African-American turned around to face me at the Torch Club in Sacramento that evening. He didn't say a word. He just glared his disgust and turned back to watch the show. His act of accountability changed me right then and there. Yet it's easy to reflect and understand it has been a lifelong process. I spoke with my mom, my dear mom, who's one of the kindest, caringest persons in the world, last week, about the racial protests, and she leaned on the oft-repeated minimizing parable of having a black friend in her church choir who seemed all right, Billy. Writing, reading, and photojournalism projects around the topic of growing up in the racial storm of the 1960s into the 70s, down outdoors in my hammock. Sounds good right about now. As for my radio gigs, Studio 416 on the fourth Saturdays of July, August, and September will be live music that I love, prepackaged and submitted to KZFR to stream, and I'm going to wrap that all up by the end of the month. The Imagining Community segments that have been so popular, not only popular, it's just brought me so much joy, that have been airing on Youth for Justice first Thursdays, will continue, and they're going to be pre-recorded, focusing on police brutality and systemic racism, with re-airing of ChicoSoul.org news segments, facilitated by David Waddell, the news director, on the Tyler Rushing and Desmond Phillips killings by Chico police. We'll also be re-airing the McGriff family interview to augment how racism festers in Butte County, and a band-in-the-box interview from 2016 at the steps of the state capitol during a day of lobbying for the formerly incarcerated. All right, folks, signing off. And as always, remember, if you have a roof, be grateful.
As we go marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mulots gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses. For the people here are singing bread and roses, bread and roses. As we come marching, marching, we battle to for men, for they are in struggle, and together we shall win. Our lives shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but keep roses. As we come marching, marching, unnumbered women dead go crying through our singing their ancient strife for bread. Small art to love and beauty, their trudging spirits new. Yes, it is bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too. As we go marching, marching, we're standing proud and tall. The rising of the women means the rising of us all. No more the drudge and idler, tend that toil where one reposes, but a sharing of life's glories. Bread and
I get no